Welcome into episode 80 of the Godly Young Men podcast. Today we are talking about why premarital sex is wrong, or as people that are familiar with the scriptures will call it, fornication, and why that's wrong. And you know,
before we get into that, shout out to Joe for his shirt. Check out that shirt.
Well, hey, I had it made, and yeah,
Godly Young Men podcast shirt. If you're interested, let us know.
This is one of one right now because I had it made just. To see what
just
it looked
for
like.
Fun, yeah.
We have some ideas as to what we want to print. Will has a great idea of Strive for Greatness on the front with this logo on the back. If you're interested, let us know if that's something that you think we should maybe get into.
I cut you off, Joe, so I apologize.
That's okay. No, I'd love if we had orders coming out to, you know, coming like crazy for shirts like this or other swag. We've printed off stickers, things like that. So yeah, let us know if you're interested.
For sure. But
this is one of the most relevant episodes, I think, that you'll have from us for the Godly Young Men, because this is one of the biggest temptations I think you will ever face. If you have not already faced this, if you've been married, if you're in a relationship right now, if you are married, whatever it is, you know how difficult this is. Let's say you're on 15, 16-year-old end and you have not yet come into relationships. This is a major temptation, one of the biggest, again, that you will ever face in your life. And, well, I feel like, I'll let you kind of get into this, I feel that premarital sex is very much painted as enticing. It's held up in our culture. You know, we watch Seinfeld, or you watch The Office, or you watch Friends, or whatever modern show, and it just...
None of those are modern, but yeah, I know what
well,
you mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Sorry, in modernity, yeah.
Yes.
No, the modern shows,
sitcoms,
I don't even watch. Sitcoms,
and, yeah.
Like the biggest sitcoms, right? The ones that everybody's going to kind of be aware of
even
at
like
some
Grey's
point.
Anatomy and stuff
yeah,
like
Grey's
that.
Yeah, Grey's
Anatomy.
Name a sitcom on TV. How I Met Your Mother, like I don't watch that, but I'm assuming that... like. The Big Bang Theory, I don't watch that one either, but all of the ones that are kind of big, and you see fornication is just normal. Premarital sex is taken kind of as a given, like you're weird if you don't.
Let me speak to the first side of that first that you spoke to about the temptation. Sexual temptation in general is going to be the biggest thing that you're going to face temptation-wise, probably biggest struggle you're going to have as a young man, but that can take on different components, you might say. Like, we've had a pornography episode that's enormously tempting for a lot of people, not tempting for others. Or I guess I should say maybe they're not going to deal with it quite as much as others. Lust in general is going to be a temptation for virtually every young man ever. But then this one, I think, from a practical perspective, is right up there with those other two of like, you are going to deal with this and it's going to be just about the hardest thing you have to deal with from a temptation standpoint, is the temptation to have sexual intercourse outside of marriage. And what we wanted to do with this episode is discuss why it's wrong from the perspective of more than just because the Bible says so. I think that's what a lot of Christian young people think, oh, well, God says so. So, I mean, there's an element of that, but we want to get to way more about why it's wrong. But Joe, back to your point about kind of Hollywood and society and the social media and all these things, it is painted in a very enticing light. It's painted in an exciting light. It's something that's, you know, man, this is just great. And everybody, virtually every entertainment outlet you can imagine, you already spoke to the TV shows, even the Netflix shows nowadays that are coming out that are really popular. It's accepted as normal. It's accepted as a given. Popular movies, a lot of the romance books that are getting really popular again. You know, obviously Nicholas Sparks and guys like him have been around for a while, but even, what's her name? Colleen Hoover. Her books are huge not among guys, but among girls, and it's pretty big. Romance books that are just filled with outside of extramarital sexual activity. Popular music, of course. Like again, just about every entertainment outlet you can imagine is really pushing this idea of sex outside of marriage is awesome. It's fantastic and it's normal. And as a result, it's thought of as not that big a deal by a lot of young people. Even a lot of Christian young people, it's thought of as... I kind of know it's wrong, but I really don't consider it all that big of a deal. And so what that leads to, go figure, is a lot of Christian young people sleeping with their girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, being intimate with somebody who is not their wife. And I do, before we get into this section kind of that I just prefaced, I want to shout out, this episode is from, or I guess the originator of this is from a comment that we got. I think it was just Basketball Fan something. I don't think I had a name attached to it, but I wanted to...
Basketball 82940.
There you go. I wanted to shout you out, whoever you are. We very much appreciate you, the support, appreciate you listening, and we appreciate the comment. There are a lot of interesting questions in there. I wanted to say this episode that we're doing right now is because of you, and so I think it's a very relevant topic for godly young men, thus why we're discussing it. basically how to deal with intimacy questions before marriage. And so that's what we're going to go to with this episode.
Yeah, and you already spoke to this, but for godly young men, it's incredibly important to know the answer of why premarital sex is wrong.
Like, why is it wrong? Yeah.
Yes, the Bible says it's wrong. Okay. You know, we do see that. Porneia is actually the word used, which is sexual impurity, sexual immorality. Fornication is kind of the word that's going to be used a lot in the Greek. But the way that the modern Church of Christ kid, and really the modern religious kid, grows up being taught this is just don't do it. Well, God says not to, right? So we just shouldn't because God says not to. True. However, there's a lot of things that God says not to that unfortunately we end up engaging in. There's no discussion. There's no explanation of any of this. It's just kind of a blanket statement of, hey, don't do it. And then, okay, I guess I'm not supposed to do it. Kids are curious. This is hormones just pumping through us that we are not used to. That's like, whoa, man, I really seem to love this person. And so we get this in our mind that's like, it's just love and it's kind of the natural outflowing. And sex is the natural outflowing of true intimate love, which a lot of boyfriends or girlfriends don't have that. But true intimate love, which is why it's supposed to be on the confines of marriage, we're going to get into that. But you just look at the way that the modern Church of Christ kids, modern religious kids are taught, and it's so lacking.
And I would just say, I know we probably get some watchers, listeners in our Church of Christ. Both Joe and I are, and so of course we grew up in that. And so that's kind of the perspective we're coming from, is like, this is not to bash the Church of Christ. We believe, you know, it's the church to be in, but in a lot of instances, they treat sex as taboo. Like, don't talk about it. Don't discuss it. Certainly don't have any lessons about it. You know, maybe briefly mention it in a teen class, but then move on really quickly because it's awkward. And so, yeah, a lot of teenagers in the Church of Christ grow up not really hearing much about it because it is treated as taboo. And so if they're not learning about it from their congregation, their classes, you know, at their church,
or their parents,
they're probably not learning it from their parents, which means guess who they are learning it from? Friends at school, or even worse, online. Online community, porn, whatever it is. And so, it's difficult, and this is why I think a lot of Church of Christ kids probably grow up viewing it as not that big of a deal, is because if you're getting all of your sexual worldview, you might say, from online, from those who are not coming at it from a biblical perspective, you're probably not going to view it as that big of a deal. And so that's why we wanted to have this episode. Again, shout out to basketball fan 823, whatever, for the idea. But we wanted to tackle, why is it wrong in addition to because the Bible says so. There's an element of that, but there's other things too. So anything to add before we get into this list?
God always says these things for a reason.
Yeah.
Whether we know them or not, there's always a reason. You know, the because I told you so. That's not God. God has a reason for this. You even read through we've been teaching it at our church through Leviticus, and you look at some of the laws for Leviticus and you go, what in the world? And then when you zoom out, you go, that makes perfect sense. You have an entire chapter dedicated to something that we may look at and seems kind of weird, but then you fast forward 1,000 years, you go, that made perfect sense as to why he did that.
Which color me shocked that the creator of the universe, right, who is all-knowing, all-powerful, actually knows what's best. Like, man, that's just absolutely mind-boggling.
Exactly.
Of course that's the way it is.
And with that being the case, when it comes to fornication, not only does he know what's best, he's calling us to good. He is good. He's not some fuddy-duddy, you know, he just doesn't want you to have any fun, it's okay, everybody does it. There's a reason why, and that's very much what we want to get into, why premarital sex is wrong. We want to get into what we want to chase, you know, the good things, and we'll have that discussion here in a bit, but why is premarital sex
wrong? I'll let you go and get into the first one. I'll get into the second one.
It's skipping ahead to the pinnacle of intimacy. Sex is the pinnacle of intimacy. You look at Song of Solomon, and in Song of Solomon, which is actually kind of a difficult book to read and divine and to get through to understand, because you're kind of back and forth what's actually taking place. But it is a wedding ceremony, and you're going to go through the first couple chapters. They're not sleeping together. It's after the wedding ceremony takes place that they sleep together. So this goes all the way back to Solomon, who has, you know, who knows at the time how many wives, but he's holding himself until marriage because it is the pinnacle of intimacy. And when you're skipping ahead on that, you're robbing yourself, because how can you be spiritually intimate with somebody when you're committing sin? How can you be emotionally intimate with somebody when you haven't committed to them through a covenant relationship, which really kind of gets us into number two.
Yeah, so the second aspect of why it's wrong is because there's no concept of commitment there. You're just a boyfriend, girlfriend. You haven't committed to them. You say, well, you know, I've committed to be their boyfriend, girlfriend. It's not commitment. Again, right. Especially in our current dating culture, our current dating society, no matter how much you may think you love that person, no matter how many, you know, goodnight texts you've sent them, or like, I'm not trying to disparage people, especially if you've been in a, you know, maybe a relationship for a long time with somebody. there's still a level of commitment that you have not made. Even if you've, you know, done something that obviously neither one of us would condone, which is move in with your boyfriend or girlfriend, you still don't have that level of commitment
right.
where, you know, you have quote unquote earned a level of intimacy. You are kind of skipping out on that, or I should say, it just doesn't exist. The concept of commitment does not exist because you could, you know, one bad night, one, you know, rough argument, and you could leave just like that. You know, you could be separated instantly, and you say, well, you can get divorced. There's still a level of extra commitment that takes place within marriage that until you cross that, you know, that threshold into marriage, you're just choosing to engage in something without any kind of commitment attached to it.
That's the key. Covenant is the key. You are in a covenant, not just with the other person, but with God. When you're not in a covenant with God, that is an issue, right? Well, I've committed to the other person. No, you haven't. You haven't put a ring on it. And the covenant element of this, of doing this in the eyes of God, in right. the eyes of other people, through a wedding ceremony, that's what binds somebody together. Sex is a binding thing because there's oxytocin involved, which is very
biologically.
Much, biologically, it binds you to the other person. And we know, and I don't think this is on your list, but we know there's a super glue element. And when you glue together with this person and you pull apart, then you do it with another person, pull apart, do it with another person, it actually takes a long time to reset that in the mind and to reset the oxytocin response where you are going to bind to your spouse. So if you go out and sleep with six other people, it's going to be a lot harder to actually have really good intimate sex with your spouse. So, well, I'm not going to sleep with six other people. It's just my girlfriend. We're going to get married one day. Even then, first off, when there is no commitment and there's no covenant, how much are you going to open yourself up to this person?
Right.
How much am I really going to be intimate in a sexual relationship when I don't know that I can trust you? You haven't committed to me. You haven't actually gone into covenant with God with me. And to your point, you said, well, you could divorce. Don't ever use the D word, divorce, in marriage. Don't do it. Stay away from it. Divorce wrecks it because divorce very much is the breakup. It's like, well, I can back out. God's not condoning divorce. God hates divorce, it tells us actually in Malachi 3. So if you can get rid of divorce, that out of your thinking, and the till death do us part and the covenant you make and the vows you take actually matter, this is when sex is at its best, because how can you be naked with someone when you don't know them and they're not committed? I said this before, but you know, I think Genesis 2:25, they were naked and unashamed, is such a contrast to Genesis 3:9, where they immediately know their nakedness. And as I've said before, Genesis 2:25 is marriage, Genesis 3:9 is fornication. Naked and ashamed, unashamed, naked and ashamed. You can be naked with that person, but there will always be a shameful element to it because you're doing something outside the confines of what God has allowed.
Well, I think in a way, commitment, the ultimate commitment is represented by sex and vice versa. Like the right. sexual relationship that you have with a person is supposed to represent the ultimate level of right. commitment. Why premarital sex is wrong is because you haven't made that commitment yet. And so again, it's empty.
You're naked prematurely. You haven't been naked right. covenantally.
There's an emptiness there that does not that exists in an outside of marriage sexual relationship that God has designed not to exist in a marital relationship. But let's keep going, because this third one ties in, sure. of course, very much so. All these somewhat tie together. As far as why is premarital sex wrong? Thirdly, you're getting all the privileges without the responsibility. Without the responsibility, again, without the commitment of and we're going to talk to the men here, because Golly, I'm in podcast, from a husband's perspective, I'm responsible for my wife now. I'm responsible for making sure she's provided for, making sure she's emotionally taken care of. I have a responsibility. If you're not married, no matter how committed you are, no matter how much you say you love this person, you don't have that level of responsibility. You just don't. And so when you engage in sexual activity outside of marriage, you are getting these privileges that are only supposed to be, according to God, given to those who have accepted the responsibility. Yep. Again, from a man's perspective, the responsibility of taking care of this woman that God gave you, you don't have that, yet you're still getting the privileges. In any kind of system, that's a backwards way to look at it.
Yeah. We've heard it before, but the getting the milk without buying the cow.
Yeah.
Why would you need to place a ring on it? You're getting all the privileges ahead of time. You're getting the relationship and you're getting the sex.
Why would I want the responsibility?
Right. I don't want responsibility. I don't want to have to, well, I love this person. Yeah. And what happens when you fall out of love, as the modern understanding of it states? This is why so many people are choosing to not get married, is if I can live with my girlfriend and sleep with her, why would I need to get married? Marriage all of a sudden isn't special. You remove God from marriage, and what is marriage? Marriage is only, and this is why homosexual marriage is such an oxymoron, there's no such thing. You can't have two men marry, you can't have two women marry, because it is breaking the understanding of what marriage is, which is a God-designed thing between a man and a woman in Genesis 2. It's an oxymoron and it doesn't work. it's very similar to this, which is like, if you remove the responsibility and you remove the covenant and you remove everything that makes marriage special and you just give all of that up front, why in the world would you get married?
No incentive to.
There's no incentive to. So you're getting all the privileges without the responsibility. Number four is just the selfishness. And I think a lot of times you can use the other person as your own object of lust. I think
I've
said
shield,
it before. Kinda, yes. Yeah. And I've said this before. My wife and I slept together before marriage. I'm not proud of it in the least. It was a moral failing on my part, but I think I had gotten free from pornography, but I don't think I'd fixed the heart. So I think I just turned her into my porn. I think I allowed her to become the object of my lust. That's incredibly wrong, and it's incredibly selfish for me to view her through that lens. Instead of cherishing her and cherishing her virginity and cherishing what God has blessed her with and what God has blessed me with and taking that to the altar and really getting into this covenant with her, you jump the gun, and it's ultimately a selfish response to say, I want that. I want something from you. Yeah, but what if she wasn't necessarily willing to give? Now, she was, obviously. We both gave it together. But that was stealing what was not ours. I had not put a ring on it. I had not made the covenant. And it was a selfish perspective of me turning her into the object of my lust.
Yeah, I mean, again, you could argue, well, it's me showing my love for this other person, or what if this other person wants it? There's no way to sugarcoat just the selfishness that is attached to it of I want something, to Joe's point, that does not yet belong to me.
Yep.
I want something that I have not yet, in a weird sounding way, paid the price for, and, you know, paid the price in the terms of commitment that we're talking about, of the covenant you make before God. That's according to the way that God has designed it, that is what has been set in place, is there is a price to be paid, so to speak. There's a covenant to be made, and you are saying, I want to skip that part, and I want what I want. There's no other way but to describe that as selfish. Again, no matter how much you can shield yourself with, oh, it's because I love this person, it's because this person wants this, whatever, like, no, it's selfish, and I don't really know any other way to describe it other than that. Number five, I just kind of spoke to it. It's against God's design for the family. It just is. It flatly is. And if you are watching this, listening to this, and you don't really care how God designed the family, then you can go and shut this podcast off, because there's no use in you listening. Hopefully, you're listening with the perspective of, I want to be a godly young man. I want to follow God's design for things. And so this is a pretty substantial reason as to why this is wrong, is because God didn't design it this way. It's the same reason transgenderism is wrong. Why is it wrong? Why would it be wrong for me to wake up tomorrow and decide, you know what? I want to be a female, so let me take different types of hormones and change my body and change the way I dress. Why is that wrong? Because God designed me as a man, and for me to actively contradict that, say, you know what, God, I think actually I know better. I think I'm actually a woman. Let me go change that. I'm actively contradicting what God designed. Joe already spoke to homosexual marriage. Exactly the same thing. God designed it one man, one woman. For two men to say, well, you know what, I want to do it this way, that's actively against God's design for marriage. It's no different than premarital sex. Of God designed sex to be between a husband and a wife only, and for you to say, and for somebody to say, well, I kind of want to do that before we're husband and wife, it's just against God's design.
Yeah, and it's jumping the gun. Again, God has blessed us. Sex is amazing. Sex is a huge blessing from God. We're going to get into a few words of advice toward the end here of being excited for it. But sex is incredible within the confines of what God has decided, within the design for the family and the family structure. Sex is intended to be for a lot of things. It's intended for our enjoyment. It's also it's supposed to be for procreation as well. It's intended for procreation. How many people have had sex outside marriage, have kids, and then it ruins the kid's life?
Oh, that was the other thing I was going to bring up for the selfishness point, is like, you don't consider what could come of this.
Right.
You don't consider, sorry, I meant to make this point, so I'm going to real quick and then I'll hand it back to you.
Go for it.
The selfishness of, well, maybe a kid could come from this, and, you know, that would, you know, in any time a child is being born into a one-parent household, it, you know, the statistics are off the charts of how that child's life ends up working out. It's usually not great. But also the perspective of not thinking about, okay, what if we do break up? What am I doing to her? What am I doing to her future spouse? What am I doing to my future spouse if I don't end up with this person?
Right.
Those are the different levels of selfishness, again, that I meant to get to, where you're not thinking of that. You're thinking of you, yourself, and what you want.
Because kids, STDs, things like that can result, and you go, whoa, 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 well, we're just going to use protection. Take a second, look yourself in the eye in the mirror. See how that feels. I'm willing to break covenant. I'm willing to jump the gun on this. I'm willing to pervert God's design for the family. I'm going to use protection. It's okay. try selling that to yourself.
Right.
That is not an easy sell, in my opinion. That's not an easy sell for myself of like, I figured it all out, I'll just use protection. That's not the answer here. The answer is maybe don't do it. And we get to the sixth and final point, which is that God and the Bible do forbid this. You get to Hebrews 13, verse 4, marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers, God will judge.
Yeah, as he's going to the next one, I got two other passages on the list here. We wanted to give this one last because we did not want to just make this a, well, the Bible says that it's wrong, and so therefore that's all you need to know. There is an element of, okay, if you listen to all five of these and go, well, you know, maybe I can make an excuse around all five of these. You can't really make an excuse out of this one. Like,
right.
my son Jackson he'll turn 3 in November, so he's going on 3. And his new favorite question is why? Literally everything. He'll ask, what are y'all doing? And we'll tell him, well, why? Why this? Why that? Jackson, can you go do this? Why? And, you know, he's not doing it to be disrespectful. That's just his new favorite question because he's super curious. And it does get to, we try to explain everything to him. Why? Well, because this, because that. It gets to a point where my wife and I will just get to the point of like, because we said so. Go do this because we said so. That's all you need to know. You don't need to know the reasoning, the logic, everything behind it. You're not even 3 years old yet. Do it because we're your parents and we said so. Again, to Joe's point earlier, the Bible has reasons and God ultimately has reasons. That does not mean that we're entitled to, well, God, show me your reasoning first and then I'll obey you. No, 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 no.
Right.
God gets to make the right calls. Even if we don't fully understand or agree, God says it. There is, to some extent, a level of, well, because he said so, and that's why. And so there is an element of this, and that's why I said at the start of the episode, and so we wanted to include this part because even though there is a reason why, hopefully as you've kind of gathered based on what we've looked at, God ultimately does get the final say.
Absolutely. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, starting in verse 3, for this is the will of God, your sanctification, that is, that you abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in lustful passion like the Gentiles who do not know God. We're to possess our own vessel in sanctification and honor. Fornication is not possessing in sanctification. It is not a sanctified act because we are by nature doing something against God, and sanctification is the process of being made holy. And then the last one we have is 1 Corinthians chapter 7, starting verse 2. But because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does, and likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. That's revolutionary at the time. Just remember that for a century. That's going to be revolutionary, especially giving women that right of, hey, you have it over your husband's. What's the operative words there? Husband and wife.
All God-ordained sexual activity is in the context of husband, wife, all throughout Scripture.
Because I go back to covenant. I go back to, yep, God said, this is beautiful between a man and a woman, and sex is intended to represent the union that you can have. It's the pinnacle of intimacy, and that's the intimacy we'll have with him in heaven, is just this amazing, I'm naked and unashamed and fully known, and Adam and Eve were walking naked in the garden with God, and all things were laid bare, and that was beautiful. Marriage is the only place where you can have all things laid bare and for it to be beautiful. Anything outside of that, and there's a shame element to it. You're supposed to not have any shame in marriage with any of this, but it starts with intimacy. It starts with opening up. Now, we come to, I think, of an interesting question, and Will, I'm curious your thoughts. You may kick it right back to me. And that's the question of how far can you go? We're talking about intimacy. How do you build intimacy outside of sex with a girlfriend? I do think you got to work on the spiritual and the emotional and the intellectual intimacy before you can hit the physical. And so spiritually is taking care of her and making sure you're not fornicating and making sure you're leading her closer to God. And the emotional is sharing goals and hopes and dreams and things like that. And the intellectual is just being friends and talking about life and everything else. Those things will build intimacy, but I will warn you, the more you do that and the more you get into that, the harder it will become, the more difficult it will become to stay pure and to stay clean. Because out of that, sex will naturally arise. I want to connect with this person.
Because you're connected on every other level.
Correct. I want to connect with this person. That's why I don't believe in long relationships, or I don't specifically in long
engagements.
Engagements, yeah. Is, look, I've already talked about these things and we are ready to go. So why would I just wait a year to get engaged? That's just playing with fire. But then you get to, how far can I go in the meantime? Okay, I'm not sleeping with her. I'm not being intimate in that way, but how far can I go within this marriage, within this relationship rather, before marriage?
So I think about the, I guess, purity culture movement, the Duggars come to mind, of like the really big proponents of your first kiss has to be your wedding kiss. No holding hands till engagement, even. And just kind of that idea. So there's kind of that end of the spectrum, and then there's other people who will never say this out loud, but basically, like, as long as I don't, you know, actually have intercourse, then we're good to go. Technical virginity is what that's called. And so this is a difficult question, because there is just a natural progression of sexual physical activity, and everybody mentally has a line. And a lot of people watching this, when you have a line in your head of where you will stop. Again, it's just a natural progression. So the question is, how far can you go? In other words, where should your line be? Is kind of the tough task of what we've been given to answer this question. And so I do not think so. It's tough, because, like, holding hands, it's totally harmless, and of course it's harmless. It is, but what is holding hands naturally going to want to, you know, progress to? So I don't know, man. I will say, like, what I plan to do with my kids is obviously very much oversee and be involved in their relationships. And because there's the fear of, like, okay, if you don't let them even hold hands, what are they doing behind your back type of thing? So I think holding hands is fine. I think I'm not necessarily subscribing to your first kiss absolutely has to be your wedding kiss. At the same time, if your hands are starting to move, and if you're alone, which neither one of us think is a good idea, like out of complete supervision, that's, you're going too far, in my opinion, in that instance. But that's where it gets difficult, because, again, holding hands is going to want to lead to, you know, hand up the arm or whatever it is. And so I'm very curious your thoughts on this, because all of our kids are very young, so it's going to be a while till we have to deal with this. But this is a question that a lot of young men, I'm sure, have.
So my wife and I, she was my first relationship, actually. I was 21, 22.
Batting 1,000, one for one.
One for one, baby. That's all it is. And to the point that, you know, are you gay? Like, are you interested in women? Yes, I am very much interested in women. But I really didn't want to get everything started before then, because I realized, like, I am the type that, especially with my addictive gene and addictive background, I am the type that could take this too far, and sure enough, that's exactly what happened. On the other hand, I think that's partly why that did happen, is I do see people in the world that's like, well, they're on their fifth girlfriend by the time they're 18 years old. Maybe they've done a lot with their previous girlfriends, but sometimes they can hold themselves in a better position because they're used to being around females.
The person who's never done anything.
Yeah. Right. I was the person who never did anything. So when I held hands with Alyssa, like, whoa, man, I had no idea that these hormones existed. It was completely foreign to me. And so that comes into the equation, yeah, as to, I don't know, if my boys are 20 years old and they've never been in a relationship, I'm going to be more on the helicopterish end of things. And that doesn't mean they're going to make the same mistakes as me, but I also know where that can lead in the mind. You know, just holding hands, are you serious? That's not for everybody. And I'm not, certainly not condemning people who do it. We have to think about a couple different things. First off, we have to think, are we defrauding her? Holding hands is not defrauding her. Making out and touching her all over and doing things that the average person certainly isn't going to do. That is getting close to defrauding her. I think you are taking something from her. Well, I didn't take her virginity, or I didn't have sex with her. Yeah, but that still is hers. You're touching body parts that are not yours, and you are making out and having these lustful thoughts. I'm sorry, she's not yours. That is a lustful thought if you're looking to take it further, and you're very much getting close to that line. So I'd say that's the first thing, is the defrauding. The second thing is it potentially going to incite something internally for me that I can't, like, once the cat's out of the bag, right, Pandora's box, once it's open, it don't go back. So we have to think about that on the front end, and this is going to be different for each person. For me, honestly, the holding of hands was like,
that was the Pandora's box.
That was kind of Pandora's box of, like, it feels really good to hold somebody else's hand. And then, yes, it's up the arm, and then it's when other people aren't looking. Like, I know the progression. I've made the mistakes. I'm not standing here from some high up level of I'm perfect. I was not perfect. And so knowing that, and knowing how fast this snowballs downhill, yeah, I'm definitely going to be more on the stricter end of things. And the one thing that I would say is have somebody that holds you accountable. If I was talking to you and talking to my brother about it during this time of, like, the feelings that are coming up, and whoa, man, I just a little scared, honestly, at how much I like holding her hand. If I was able to really talk about that and there wasn't a shameful element, I don't think I would have gone near as far. Talk to people about this. But when it goes to how far can you go, I think that's kind of the wrong question. I think the question needs to be, how can I uphold her purity, and how can I make sure that I'm honoring her and honoring my own body
and maintain my self-control
and maintain my self-control, exactly, and not putting myself in a position where I'm more likely to lust after her And with her in my mind, who knows what I'm doing later, you know, with her in my mind and having these thoughts, that is taking again from her that is not ours. It's the same. We're turning her into porn essentially at that point. We have to be very, very careful about that. So I know I didn't fully answer
the question. So I was going to say, so are you a first kiss has to be wedding kiss guy? That's so dumb.
And not necessarily, no, but I do think that it needs to be around other people. People need to be able to see it, and it cannot be making out. Because there's a difference between a kiss, you know, public kiss where you're kissing on the lips, and the, I'm exploring the mouth. Like, that's not okay. Yeah. That's not appropriate, in my opinion, because, again, that's leading to other lustful
thoughts. That's only going to lead one place.
Correct. Yeah. So it really is an individual thing, just know how far it's going to go.
We went a little long here, but I think that discussion was much needed because it is and Joe's, credit to Joe, he's the one that added this to the outline. People, like, young guys are going to wonder this, like, well, okay, how far is too far? I think most people deep down know, but I put on here for a few words of advice. I'm going to skip to the third one here. It's an obvious metaphor here. Don't spoil the movie by reading all the spoilers and watching all the good clips on YouTube.
That's a great point. Yep.
Like, you are, in a way, it's not that your sex life will be forever ruined if you know, with your spouse, if you fornicate beforehand. Obviously, that's not the case. There is an element of your wedding night will be less special. There is an element of you are just jumping the gun. Again, to further the metaphor, you're reading the spoilers, you are watching all the good clips of the movie before you actually sit down and watch the full movie, and so the experience is going to be a little bit less when you watch the movie for the first time. Doesn't mean you're not going to enjoy the movie. Doesn't mean, you know, that you're not going to think it's the greatest movie ever, you know, again, to further the metaphor. But, yeah, don't spoil the movie. Like, don't read the spoilers. Just, there is something that is beautiful about waiting till that wedding night where guy's on his sixth girlfriend, like you said, you know, this is the one, they get married, but he slept with four other ones beforehand. Something is not there, like the virginity and all that whole aspect. And so I went ahead and skipped to the third one, Joe, as far as this last section of a few words of advice. I don't know if you'd add anything to that or if you want to get us into some of these other ones.
Yeah, I would say, I think I love the metaphor there. Sex isn't everything. It's really important to realize sex is not everything. This culture pushes it as though it is. Really, like, does, it's the greatest thing ever. It's really good. When you get married, what you're going to realize is, no, we're not having sex every single day. Like, we have lives to live. And maybe you do, and fantastic. Good for you if that's the case. But
we just seriously doubt it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you might for the first little bit, but you're going to have kids. She's going to get tired, and you're going to have a lot of work, and you're going to be striving for other things. And sex is going to fall off the pedestal there. You know, when we put it up on the pedestal, like, it becomes everything that we could possibly want. Don't hold it up to that degree. It's great, but it's great in the confines of marriage because it's really where you can work on this together with somebody, with your spouse, in making it as special as it could be. It's where you're working on what pleases her and what pleases you, and you're working together in it. And so with that, look ahead to your future sex life with excitement. This is not to say, well, we're downers on sex.
Number three here,
sex is great, man. Sex is fantastic. It's not the end-all be-all. It is not everything. It is great within the confines of what God has decided, where there's no shame at all about it.
I put this one on here, this look ahead to your future sex life with your wife with excitement, because I don't think the Church of Christ taboo culture around sex is a good and healthy thing. I just don't.
I agree.
I think it creates, again, just warped views of sex for young men leading into marriage. It's like, I've been told this thing is bad my entire life, and now I'm supposed to just dive headfirst into it on my wedding night. Like, I don't think that's good. I think there should be a level of excitement. There should be a level of, there's always gonna be a level of curiosity, but, like, again, in a healthy environment from a biblical perspective, like, you can talk about this. You can ask questions about this. This is something that you should be excited. Again, if you're unmarried and looking forward to this with your wife, you should be excited about it. And then fourthly and finally, Joe spoke to this one already, but find someone who you can talk to about this. And I'm going to say it should not be your 18-year-old unmarried buddy. It needs to be somebody preferably who is older, but definitely somebody who is married. Yeah. You don't go to the guy who's been divorced four times and ask for marriage advice.
Right.
Don't go to the person who is not married and shouldn't be having sex with anybody for your, sex questions or advice or whatever. Find somebody who's married. Maybe they're really young. Maybe they're a young person, but they're already married. Talk to that person. They don't necessarily have to be old, but obviously the older people are going to probably be a little bit more experienced and knowledgeable about it. At the same time, as Joe already spoke to, it is very helpful to find someone you can talk to about this, because you're 16, 17, 18 years old, you're going to have questions, and I would encourage you, don't go online to find your answers.
And look, we're also very aware, this is very difficult. We opened this, we're going to end with this. This is very difficult to stay pure in this. We're not naive. We're not that old. It was not that long ago where we remember this taking place. And so if you're really struggling right now and you're watching this, it's like, man, I'm struggling to stay pure with my girlfriend, this last one is for you. Seriously, find somebody to talk to about it. Find some accountability surrounding it. Let people know, like, hey, it is good that you're attracted to this person if you're looking toward marriage. If you weren't attracted, that creates its own issues, right? You want to be attracted to them, and you want to desire sex with them. You're not wrong for wanting to desire sex with somebody that you really become intimate with in other ways, right? You become close with in other ways. You've grown to the point where it's like, I think I'm going to marry this person. But you're taking what's not yours if you jump the gun on it. Talk to somebody, stay present with them, and maybe look, if you're going to put a ring on it, right, if she becomes your fiance, that's fantastic. I would strongly encourage you to have a shorter time of engagement and look toward marriage if you really do feel that confident. And if you're not that confident, you really shouldn't be that close to that person.
True.
You should not be even thinking about sex if you're not confident enough to put a ring on this person's finger and to want them for life. So just a few words of advice. We realize it's difficult. We realize that it's going to be a challenge to keep yourself pure. But seriously, this last point of finding someone you can talk to, look forward to sex, but gain some accountability surrounding as well. So, Will, anything else you did?
That's all I had.
All right.
Well, episode 80.
Episode 80 already, man. We appreciate you watching. We appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you again next week.